What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, taking its lead from the British Rail Network and running behind schedule this week. On this episode, a pain in the arse for Wickham as Ainsworth leaves for QPR, Marcelo Nunez golazo analysis, let them all come down to listen to our team of the week, and Hartlepool curl one out. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Hello, listener. Thanks for your patience this week. We're a little later than usual because I've been a bit under the weather, I'm afraid, but we're back and we are raring to go. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, joined today by Adrian Clark.
Hello. Great intro. Love that. Terrific.
Thanks, thanks Keith and Hartlepool for just putting the topper on it last night. Sam Parkin's also with us. How are you doing, Sam?
All right, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Adrian, give us a plug of those new social media channels that you're so adept with and that Sam and I are so incompetent at.
Well, I don't know about being adept, but we're churning out the content, which is great. So if you want to see us as well as listen to us, get involved on Instagram, What the EFL, at What the EFL, I should say, on TikTok. Talk is the same at What the EFL, and on Twitter it's EFL What the. Get involved, lots and lots of sort of visual content for you to enjoy.
If anybody could enjoy looking at us three, I'll leave that up to your own personal taste, listener. How good is this, by the way? The guys at Quinbet, our partners, have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, the constant rotation of managers in the EFL has provided us with a stable format point with which to start the show. Today is no exception. Okay, well, we wondered in a recent show whether Neil Critchley was on thin ice at QPR. Well, that ice cracked and he was swallowed up by the lake underneath last week, by which I mean he got the sack. He won his first game against Preston, but only picked up 5 points from the 30 available since then. I'm going to ask Sam about his replacement shortly because it's a subject close to his heart, of course. But first of all, Adrian, what next for Neil Critchley? Because this has been a terrible, not even year or so for his reputation, hasn't it, given the way he's left his two championship jobs?
Yeah, there's a bit of damage there, no doubt about it. I think he's a little bit disrespectful the way that he sort of slipped out of Blackpool, you know, via the back door. Took a long, long time to communicate to the fans on why he did it. And yeah, it's just never built up a chemistry or an affinity with the QPR fans. Results were very, very poor, weren't they? Just the one win in 12 championship games. What happens next? I think he goes back to being a number two. I really do. I genuinely think that he's happy just to be part of a management team. I don't think he's obsessed by being a manager. We saw that with the move to Aston Villa with Steven Gerrard. And in the past, of course, he's worked successfully in the academy setup. He'll get a job. I just feel he's going to have to maybe go back into the academy system or be a number two to somebody else moving forward. I think for now, I can't see too many people rushing to employ him, which is amazing when you consider that when he was in charge of Blackpool, he was one of the most coveted head coaches around. But that's how quickly things can change.
So from the QPR perspective then, Sam, it's Gareth Ainsworth who's coming in. He signed a 3.5-year deal after more than a decade in charge of Wickham. Are they going for what they think will be a safe appointment in so much as this is somebody who's not going to ditch them the first time somebody else flashes their eyelids at them like McBeal did, or somebody who's got the experience in a way that Critchley didn't?
No, I think it's an appointment for someone who deserves the opportunity. And I think it's the timing as well. The type of character that Gareth Ainsworth is, that's what the club badly needs right now. And I know we've discussed often about ex-players going back and too much is put on that, but I think we're talking about a guy who gets the best out of what he's got at his disposal. He will improve the mood at the ground, which is desperately needed right now. And yeah, he needs to restore a little bit of confidence. I think in the short term, it's a good appointment. I'm like kind of 75% glass full with this because I think he's going to have to adapt. And I think he's a really bright guy. I think he's a lovely man, really humble when I've spent time with him. And, you know, we've spoken to Joe Jacobson, to David Wheeler, to Matt Bloomfield, and they absolutely love him. And you have to buy into that culture that he's created at Wickham. It's incredibly unique. But he's going to have to adapt because, yeah, I think he's got better players at his disposal now. if he was to come and play maybe like he did during the infancy of his Wickham career, that just won't transmit and the QPR fans won't have that. But I think he's got really intelligent, talented number two in Richard Dobson. And I think that that means that they will play a little bit more football. And I think that that will probably be maybe in time. In the short term, just need to get results. But I think you'd have to be a little bit careful in terms of the style. And I think that's probably what's been kind of pointed at him during the speculation the last couple of years when he's been, is he in for the QPR job? Are they going to go for it? And the reluctance has probably been about the style. And I think the best managers can probably adapt. And I hope he can do. But in the short term, you know, what he's done at Wickham so wonderfully well is the psychological side of the game, is, you know, going with some squads that probably aren't as good as what in some dressing rooms in League One, and inspiring and coming up with a game plan to beat some bigger hitting clubs. And that's what he does remarkably well. So it'll be what he does within the confines of the dressing room to improve performance. And I think in the short term, it's a really sensible decision. Whether it's going to be one that goes on for the 11 years that he had at Wickham, I doubt very much, but hopefully he can have some longevity and create that that culture, which, like I've just touched on, I fully believe, you know, what they say about that Wickham dressing room. It's a very unique place.
Yeah, if he gets 11 months, that'll be a long tenure by Championship standards, I think. So he's out at Wickham, replaced Clarkey by Matt Bloomfield, guest on the show not a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about how well he was doing at Colchester. No surprise that he wanted to make the move back to his club. What's your take on this? Is this one of those trying to make it a seamless transition, or it carries an element of risk, doesn't it, when you appoint a club legend manager and there's potential damage to their reputation if it doesn't go well?
Yeah, it's the most logical choice for Wickham Wanderers, no doubt about it. It does make me wonder if this was the plan for Wickham all along. It's been perfect for them that he's gone out there and got some experiences in the field. It feels like they've loaned Matt Bloomfield to Colchester to be a manager for sort of 6 months or so to get him back to do the business for them. Obviously, they weren't to know that Gareth would leave now, but it was always going to happen at one point, and I think he would have been they're probably their one and only choice. He's done pretty well at Colchester. He steadied the ship. He's created a bit of a culture of his own there, made some great signings in January, which shows he's got a terrific eye for recruitment. So he's left Colchester in a better place than when he arrived, but it was always going to be a long journey, wasn't it, for that club to get in a position to challenge for promotion. So for him to jump effectively a division and a half upwards, you know, into the top end of League One is, you know, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? So, yeah, we wish him well. He's a good lad. And I think that the Wickham dressing room would absolutely welcome the appointment, because it's not going to be a radical change from Gareth Ainsworth, who leaves a big old hole, doesn't he, personality-wise?
There has been another managerial movement this week. Keith Curl has been sacked by Hartlepool. They're only just above the relegation zone in League Two, our pools. They're a point clear of Crawley, but they played four games more than them. Defeat in stoppage time at home to Newport on Tuesday was the final straw. The chairman, Raj Singh, said, "This has been one of the most difficult decisions I've had to make at pools. Keith, in so many ways, has improved the football club and our culture in so many ways, but not particularly in terms of results. I guess it's not a surprise this, Sam, to see them hitting the panic button because it's so tight down there. And I mean, nobody's really in much form of the teams below and around them, but they felt it necessary to make a move. I wonder if this is it for Keith Curl as a Football League manager, because he's pretty much managed everybody in League Two by now."
I did find it a little bit surprising, actually, probably because they got that really good point at Wimbledon on Saturday, coming from 2-0 behind when it looked like the game was gone. But if you dig a little deeper and look at some of the recent performances, you know, lost comfortably at Crewe, and then to go down at home to Newport, albeit in the last minute, but not to have a shot on the target, be so limp in attack. And I think he's had some wriggle room in January as well to improve the squad. And I think that's always telling for an owner, isn't it? When you give them maybe 6-8 games or whatever, and you don't see that improvement. And the risk of falling out of the EFL is so great and such a scary proposition, it normally forces the owner's hand. But yeah, I'm always surprised when a team's going to be listening to a third voice in one season. I mean, that's not a great look on the owner. And I think the problems probably run a little bit deeper at Hartlepool, going back to last summer, the appointment of Paul Hartley. I don't think the fans and the owner have been on the same page. So I think it's a club that's in a little bit of disarray, irrelevant of who the manager is.
Yeah, without their two wins against Rochdale and the win against Crawley, they'd be cut adrift against the rest of the division, apart from their immediate two relegation rivals. They've been the worst side in League Two, Hartlepool. So, yeah, real struggle. Like Sam, I thought they showed good character to come back in those two draws against Wimbledon and Sutton, coming back from 2-0 down. But, yeah, ultimately, he probably had to go.
Just looking at the early runners and riders to replace him, always a bit of fun with some of the early names that get lobbed in, isn't there? You've got the likes of Grant McCann, Sean Derry, John Askey, Graham Alexander, all sound quite sensible. Marlon Harewood, is he the guy who's going to keep you in the Football League in
What's
his first
Marlon
managerial
up to these
job?
Days?
I don't know, to be honest, but he's not managing anybody, that's for sure. Lee Catamol is also in there, presumably because he's from the Northeast anyway.
I think Marlon Harewood was involved in selling cars, high-end cars to footballers.
I think it was like the wraparound thing that cars put on them, wasn't it? Like to make them look militaristic or jazzy. And say, hey, listen, you'll not hear a bad word against Marlon Harewood in my house. That's
well,
sure.
No, and that seems like a very sensible career path, I would suggest as well.
Yeah, well, look, whoever gets it, good luck. You've got a job on your hands. So that's Hartlepool looking for a new manager, as are Colchester United. In terms of QPR and Wickham, by the way, Gareth Ainsworth starts with a home game against Blackburn on Saturday. Wickham are away at Shrewsbury. All right, next today, we'll look back on some of the big midweek matchups. Well, I said big midweek matchups. I'm not sure Norwich-Birmingham really comes into that category. It wasn't, you know, a titanic tussle between two promotion contenders or anything, but it did contain one of the goals of the season. Marcelo Nunez, talk me through it, Adrian, for anyone who missed it.
Oh, it was just glorious. Absolutely glorious. I think it was a corner that came into the box. It was cleared, and it was cleared really high. So the ball drops out of the sky, and from 25 yards out, one touch on the volley, just the shape of the volley is unreal from Marcelino Nunez, and it just dips into that far corner. It's undoubtedly one of the goals of the season, if not the goal of the season from the Norwich midfielder. So well played him, and it teed up a really, really encouraging display and victory from Norwich. They faded a bit in the second half, but this was by and large pretty impressive. And yeah, they just look tactically much smarter now, a little bit more energy about the side. You can see a bit of a game plan developing. And they used the width of the pitch very nicely here. When you come up against a side that plays with that narrow midfield diamond, you've got to switch play quickly. And Norwich did that excellently in the match and created a lot of chances. So, yeah, so it's been strange under Wagner, hasn't it? Four wins from seven looks good, doesn't it? Because when they've won, they've scored three goals twice and they've scored four goals twice. Incredible. In the other three games, they've lost them all. They've blanked in them all. So, yeah, it's feast or famine for Norwich at the moment. But I do feel that they're a better side under him than they were towards the back end of the Dean Smith era.
Here's a quote from David Wagner, which if I was Nunez, Sam, would make me a little bit cross. He says of Nunez, he hasn't had too many opportunities since I've been here. When he has played, it's often been in wide areas, which isn't really playing to his strengths. So why do it then? Why not just play him in the area that plays to his strengths?
maybe he's got someone in that position he feels superior. Just trying to shoehorn someone else in with ability. I don't know. It's a bit weird, isn't it? Because you felt that the improvement was so vast so quickly in those couple of away games, and then they've not been able to back it up and go on a really good run. So a little bit strange. He's got to be in the team though, hasn't he? You know, we saw that from his first couple of appearances in the Championship as soon as he turned up. He looked like he was going to be a game changer. My biggest concern coming into this season was always going to be that creative spark. We knew Pukki would be good for a consistent amount of goals, but who was going to be the Buendia this year, the Steeperman, the Leitner of years before? Mm. And he's not really been that. So, you know, hopefully for their sake, this is it now. And he can be the creative spark. You know, with no Pukki, no Sargent at the weekend, Ida's just signed a long-term new contract, and I think he divides enormous opinion. So they'll be, you know, stronger for these last two home victories. just need to get a little bit of consistency. But with the two guys to come back, this could be their time. And Solis as well, getting a goal. He was out on loan at 20, signed in the Premier League era for big money. Another big moment that was the other night, him getting a goal. He could be an asset moving forward. But you know, on the other side of it, I was just thinking, there is 7 points separating Birmingham from the bottom three, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got dragged back in.
They might get dragged back in by a points deduction. Probably not this season, but there's some issues, aren't there? Off the field, you've got these charges. You know, the detail probably better off somebody else speaking about that. But from what I get, the gist of it, that you know, has been accused of not complying to the owners and directors' test properly, maybe from deceiving the EFL. That's the accusation, which is pretty serious, isn't it? And there's a lot of mystery surrounding the actual owner of Birmingham City. No one's completely clear on who it is. And that, I think, is something the EFL are looking to sort of clamp down on. I think that there could be a big punishment on its way for Birmingham City. Heavy points deduction maybe for next season. We'll have to wait and see.
I've talked about apathy towards my own club that I support, but the last few years covering the Championship and going to St Andrews, you just think, not another season of them around 17th, 18th. It's just incredible when you look at the season finishes from the last decade or so. John Eustace has done relatively well, I think, and introduced some better technically gifted footballers. But there's been some great nights and some great performances this season. And, you know, this is a big 3 or 4 weeks for them, I think, because there's some very winnable games there. And like I said, the gap is quite big, you know, and you get a little bit carried away when you think Neil Warnock's going in there, you know, opportunity to get back-to-back wins. But to close a 7-point gap at this stage of the season would still take an almighty upturn.
They have played a game more than third bottom Huddersfield. They've got Luton this weekend and then back-to-back games against Wigan and Rotherham. So they'll be looking to pick up a decent amount of points from those. Elsewhere, midweek, a win that falls squarely into the much-needed category for Alex Neil and Stoke. They were 3-1 victors at Swansea and they came from behind to do it, which, Sam, will give them a massive boost, I'm sure. But crikey Moses, they had some help from the Swansea defence, didn't they? Absent without leave for a couple of the goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And really good response from them. Alex Neil was speaking in the wake of this victory about the amount of goals they've shipped early. 11 in the opening 15 minutes of games, the joint worst record in a division. So responded really well. I think credit to them for the way they pressed, the way they harried in the first half in particular. You know the way that Swansea are going to set up. And altered it at halftime, managed the game well, weren't as gung-ho, sat in a little bit. And it was a really good away performance. They're just so inconsistent. You can't believe that they're ever going to really string a consistent run of results together. On the Swansea side of things, I was going to pass this off as my own, but I read this tweet yesterday and I thought you'd enjoy it. I don't think Russell Martin would probably enjoy it. Swansea have won 4 of their last 20 games. In 3 of those wins, the opposition had a man sent off when the scores were level. I mean, that is damning, isn't it? 3 wins in 19 in games in all comps. And, you know, it's still a subject matter which would have a lot of people clamour for Russell Martin to be one of the best managers in the division and to be a little bit hard done by in terms of the recruitment strategy, obviously, in the summer and in January. I'm not sure I'd fully be in that camp, but I still kind of rate him. But this is a tough time and the season just looks like it's petering out. And whether he's going to be there to have another go at it next year, I think that's highly doubtful, because I still think, I don't know what Clarkey thinks, there'll be a number of people that would take him.
I think there'd be a lot of clubs that would take him, because as a philosophy coach, I'm not sure there are many better. I think the culture has changed at Swansea. They're playing his way in the first team, in the 21s, the 18s, through the academy set up. And it's good to watch. And the players are no doubt enjoying the ideas that he's putting into their heads. But is Russell Martin a winner? Is he a winning manager? And at MK Dons, he never found the right balance. They looked terrific, but they didn't, you know, didn't go up. They didn't really challenge. They always were a soft touch at the back and conceded a lot of goals. You have to say the same about the Swansea side that he's got. I know he feels hard done by with the sort of budget, but it can't just be one way. It can't just be about what we do with the ball. It has, football is about, is two-sided. Yes, it's really important what you do with the ball. What you do without the ball is just important. You've got to be hard to play against. You've got to be organized. You've got to eradicate mistakes. And I think that on that side of management, Russell Martin's still got a lot of work to do. And the stats will absolutely confirm that. So yeah, he'll get other jobs, but yeah, I think the jury's out on whether he can be a success. On Stoke, they are incredible front runners. It's something that's kind of been lost this season. When they've scored first, they've won 9 and drawn 1 this season. They've scored 23 goals and conceded 3. That's incredible. Like, that is amazing in terms of when they lead games, they shut them down and they win them comfortably. It's games like this where they fall behind, where they've been awful. This is just their second win from 21 matches where they've had to come from 1-0 down, and they've only won twice. So yeah, this could be a game changer for them. I don't know what that stat tells you. Maybe that they're a confidence team, but yeah, it's something they need to address. You can't keep coming from behind.
They will attempt to earn back-to-back league wins for the first time since October when they host Millwall this weekend. Away from league action briefly, the Papa John's Trophy semi-finals were this week. We've got a former winner of the competition in our ranks. This season's final will be contested between Plymouth and Bolton. Always seems to be like two teams right at the top of League One who eventually work their way through to the final of this, doesn't it? What do you think, Sam, as a former winner? Is this going to be a nice distraction for the two teams who are both gunning for promotion as well? It's a long time to wait for the final, isn't it? 2nd of April.
I think it will be, yeah. I think you've got two squads that are quite deep. I'd say Bolton probably a little bit deeper. The luxury of maybe rotating a few. Easier job of keeping the squad happy. Stephen Schumacher is doing a remarkable job. And yeah, I think huge fan bases. It'll be a brilliant attendance and should be a really good game. And we saw, you know, what it did for Rotherham. I know that's maybe a bit of an isolated scenario, but, you know, Rotherham were really toiling last season, went and undeservedly beat Sutton in that final and then didn't look back really. So they'll be hoping that they can replicate that, whoever wins. And yeah, it'll be a brilliant game. I enjoyed that 20 minutes last night with Accrington down to 10 men and Bolton just absolutely peppering the Accrington goal in front of what seemed like a Bolton home support. And it just didn't look like it was going to go in, but they altered one or two things in the second half, obviously playing with the extra man. We know how good their wing backs are, and they impacted the game. And I actually wanted, you know, when the goal went in for Kachunga, I think we maybe covered, I covered a Bolton game around about a month ago or so, and he just avoided that red card. Do you remember when Deion Charles got sent off for mistaken identity, and the supporters were all like fuming because they obviously wished that Kachunga had been sent off because he was in such dreadful form.
He punched someone in the stomach, didn't he?
That was it. Yeah. I mean, he's been toiling, and he has been the target of the boo boy, shall we say? So for him to get that goal was magic. I heard actually on a podcast someone saying it's sod's law that he'll probably not play between now and the Papa John's final and pop up with a winner. Well, he's already got them to Wembley scoring that goal. So I thought that was a really nice moment that he was the man. And it looked on chances that, I don't know if Clarkie saw the game, but Plymouth looked like they shaded it in normal time. And obviously an amazing shootout. And spoken so much about Plymouth potentially being damaged by the injury to the goalkeeper. And Burton comes in and makes some unbelievable saves. So it looks like they're in good hands. Excuse the pun.
Mm-hmm. Nice pun it was too. Clarky, I feel like the narrative for this tournament is the same every year. We start off with, oh, no one cares about this. It's a disgrace that the Premier League sides can put academy teams in it. Why do we even bother with this? Then we get to the final and we say things like, do you know, this is only the third time Plymouth have ever played at Wembley. What a boost for them this will be. How great for the supporters at Bolton who've had so much dross to put up with in League Two for the last few years. Now they get a big day out and here we are again, ticking those same boxes.
Yeah, I think the format should change. I don't think that the Premier League Academy should be in it. I don't even think there should be a group stage. I just think make it a straight knockout. And it's a very, very exciting competition for clubs in League One and League Two if it's a straight knockout where you know it's not going to clog up your fixture schedule and you're going to, you know, potentially get to Wembley. It's the one trophy you can win at Wembley if you're a lower league side. So, yeah, and it's going to be great. It's going to be huge attendance, as Sam says. What would they get? 60, 70,000, I would have thought, at least for this one. On Callum Burton, did you see the picture of his water bottle?
Yeah.
He did a Jordan Pickford. Really impressive, Shambi, yeah. Actually. It's pretty easy to research penalty takers at international level, but to research, you know, penalty takers for Cheltenham Town going back, I don't know how long. I mean, that's a lot of effort and time and work that's gone into that.
That's getting Bielsa's assistant to go and hide in the training ground, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know how they, most of the players surely haven't taken that many penalties, but he went the right way in all five pens. Burton, and he saved three in a row, which was spectacular. For Cheltenham, no shame in defeat at all here. They pushed a team that's got a lot more ability than them really close. They were up against it in the end. Plymouth could easily have won it, but they gave them an almighty scare. And on the Accrington game, very quickly, yeah, Bolton completely deserved it. But that red card was daft, wasn't it, from Sean McConville? I think you just can't do it. It doesn't matter whether he's got a straight leg, whether he's trying to break his leg or not. He's dangled his leg out knee high and caught a guy. Yet you've got John Coleman trying to say that it's a harsh red. I mean, it's not. It's a definite red. And that's what blew it really for Accrington. I think they would have lost the game anyway.
Just to go full nerd, Alfie May, yep. Definitely a penalty taker, I reckon.
Yeah.
Liam Sercombe, 100% took penalties at Exeter when I was there. Bristol Rovers. Charlie Brown, I reckon we've seen him take a few pens, Matt, do you reckon?
Yep.
Yeah, and then definitely in the Football League trophy. So there's your first three. Mm. Ryan Broome used to be at Plymouth.
I knew him, yeah, yeah.
Used to be at Plymouth. Last one, Elliot Bonds, no idea. But there we go.
But they had a list on that water bottle of every player, didn't they?
I'm not mocking your point at all, Clarkie. I just mean there probably was like a little... He probably had to deep dive, didn't he? He probably had to search high and low. But I reckon Charlie Brown probably has taken one in the Football League trophy and the other ones as well. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable.
I've got to be honest, though. I used to mix it up. And I think most players do. You see these graphics on the TV of players' penalty records. They're not all going the same place every time.
I wonder if he's taking an average or if he's looking at the last one or looking just at where he looks more competent. I don't know.
I just think as a penalty taker, it makes complete sense to just have a little bit of variety because of this, because that goalkeepers will do their research. So, well played to Burton and the goalkeeping coach who obviously prepped him very, very well.
Yep. Start of April then for that final between Plymouth and Bolton. Let's briefly talk about our midweek game in League Two. A big win for promotion chasing Stockport County. It's struggling near neighbours Rochdale. Will Collar's double help County move to within a point of the automatic promotion places? Adrian, you thinking there's going to be two divisions between these teams next season?
There's every chance. Yeah, I think Stockport have got a great shot at automatic promotion from League Two. They're heading in the right direction. You know, roared on by a big support in this game. It was a bit like Accrington Bolton, where the away support dwarfed the home fans. You just feel that if they don't go up this year, they'll certainly go up next year. Rochdale are in trouble, massive trouble. They've taken 6 points from their last 13 matches. In the previous 13, they'd only taken 13 points. So that's, in fact, 19 from 26 games. That's relegation form. I've worked it out. I mean, last season you needed 39 to stay up, which means in the final 13 games of the season, they'll need at least 18, and they've not come close to looking like they'll get that. So I think Rochdale are bang in trouble here. And Jim Bentley, unfortunately, who did so well with Morecambe all those years, avoiding relegation, might just be part of one here. He's not made any impact since taking over.
They're going to just get Ian Henderson in then, Sam.
Quite possibly. He's got a few businesses though, Hendo. I'm not sure he's in need of a lower league management at this stage of his career. Just on Stockport, players returning from injury as well. Madden, Sarsavich, they were kind of the big names, weren't they, when they went on this kind of journey. Horsfall back on the bench as well on Tuesday night. So they have got strength in depth. One of those signings that I completely missed, Jack Stretton from Derby. He's at Stockport now, full-time basis, so they've got options in attack. And the other thing I wanted to bring to the party, other than the brilliant Argentina-esque awakening.
Oh, that was fantastic. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. My primary school team, weirdly, I think it might have even been my mum was in charge of, like, you know, recruiting this kit at this stage. We went Argentina, which was very, very unique, you know, like at that stage. Like, I don't think I'd ever seen a team sporting the blue and white stripes with the black.
Controversial at that time too, right? Well, we're talking 90s, still a bit of rancor from 86 knocking about.
It would have been, it would have been early 90s. It would have been exactly on the back of their dismal performances in the final at Italia 90. And my other point from this game was Will Collar chewing gum, you know, during his celebration late in the second half. I always think it's the sign of someone who is so confident at the moment to go out there. It's like playing with swagger. I'm that good right now. I'm going to have a little bit of hubba bubba on the firm. And he's got 7 goal involvements last 6 games. So more for me. You do what you like.
How can a player play football with chewing gum in their mouth? I don't get it. Like, have you ever done it?
Next time you see it, make a mental note. It'll be someone who's flying. It's someone who's like got 8 goals in 5 games. It's just like part of the act.
It used to be, because back in the day, shirts were tucked in, right? It just happened in the sort of 90s when I played. Baggy shirts, you tuck them in. A lot of managers would have a go at you if you didn't. If I wanted to show that I had a little bit of swagger, and I was a bit like that sometimes, I could get a touch cocky, I'd get the shirt out. That was my thing. And now they all wear the shirt out, don't they? There's no way I'd have chewed gum. That is incredible. Quick one on Rochdale, by the way. Sam, set pieces, would you agree they're pretty important at League Two level?
Yeah.
Rochdale, a minus 20 on set-piece goal difference, which I just think is the difference, really. They've conceded 24. That's the most by 8. So that they're awful at defending them. And you have to look at Jim Bentley and the coaching staff there and say, you know, can't you find a new way of coping with it? And they've scored 4 at the other end of the pitch, which is the fewest in the division as well. So, yeah, I mean, in open play, they're not a bad team, Rochdale. They can knock the ball around. They can create chances. But if you're going to be minus 20 on set plays, what a disadvantage that is.
Well, one team who are doing pretty well in every facet of the game are Millwall, and we're going to have a chat about them next. Yeah, it's time for our team of the week. Adrian wants to talk about them. Sam's seen them live and in living colour this very week. So we're going to collaborate a little bit. Well, I'm not. I'm just going to listen to what they've got to say. What do you like so much about Millwall at the moment, Adrian?
Well, yeah, team of the week and Millwall, I think that it's an unbelievable return, isn't it? 4 points from home games against the top 2 in the division. Sheffield United, they vanquished 3-2 at the weekend, and then they took an unlikely point off of Burnley coming from behind to draw. So I think 4 points for a possible 6 against the best 2 sides in the division is outstanding, and that alone makes them team of the week in my opinion. There was amazing energy. Now, I know that Sam was at the Burnley game and they didn't play especially well in it. He can talk about that. But the one against Sheffield United, which I did see, unbelievable verve, enthusiasm, drive. They really took the game to Sheffield United. I thought, you know, the likes of Ollie Burke, Vogslammer in the wide areas, terrific. And in Tom Bradshaw, it was an absolute masterclass of movement inside the box. I'm sure that Sam would have appreciated the goals that he scored. He had John Egan on toast. John Egan is one of the most reliable central defenders in the Championship, and he outfoxed him for all 3 goals. Just clever little bits of movement and really smart, tidy finishes. So, yeah, that was a brilliant result from Millwall. And they backed it up with a much more resolute draw against the Clarets.
Was it Bradshaw who stood out to you, Sam, against Burnley, or is he just a goal sniffer? I'm just looking at his record. He's already got more in the league this season than he has in any complete season since 2015-16 when he was at Walsall.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the maths here. I think he's played 27 games now and he's only scored in 6 of them. But because there's been the 2 hat-tricks and the brace, he's sitting now on, I think it's 11 goals, which probably sums up why he's never fully won over the supporters. And even this year, there's probably been, I think there always is at Millwall, let's get it straight, even when you score a hat-trick. I think when he, in the wake of that the other day, Gary Rowett said, like, some of the supporters were saying, and he said it himself, could have scored four or five. So I think there's always criticism. You're there to be shot at the Den, especially for the strikers. But that's maybe why, you know, they're never fully been on board. But he's in brilliant form right now, and obviously only played 18 minutes or so the other day. That was a big surprise when we turned up. But Gary Rowett, leading into this game, just said he's my only striker. He was carrying about four knocks as well. He just can't take that risk with him because he's their best opportunity of getting in the playoffs. So he looks like a genius now, Gary Rowett. Introduced him, had two chances, he missed with a header slightly later, so it could have been even better for Millwall. But you could tell, comes on so confident from Saturday, half a chance, dispatches it beautifully. Really good strike, instinctive strike as well. But yeah, so they were really good for the last 15, 20 minutes. I think sometimes you just hold your hands up. I mean, Burnley are a very, very good side. One of the best thing I can remember seeing in the Championship in recent memory. First time I've seen them live, they kind of build up with a back three. Clarkey, Josh Cullen goes and plays right side of the back three, just dictates proceedings. Martin, so confident on the left-hand side, he tucks in and plays the Zinchenko role. So they've always seemed to have spare men all over the pitch. But what Millwall did really well, they cut off the middle of the pitch, so they can't get it into Scott Twine. He was a bit of a spectator in the first half. When it goes wide, if they can lock on the wide positions, Millwall, the ball was then delivered, mop up everything aerially, Millwall. So they're really difficult, hard to breach. They don't run beyond Burnley either because they got Ashley Barnes. So that's why Millwall are so competent. It's so difficult unless they get beaten in one-on-one situations. And Zaruri did try that throughout the evening. Well, I mean, what a player he is, but his shooting was a little bit wayward. But they still made chances, and not many teams make chances at Millwall, and not many teams defend Millwall's set piece threat so well. So I still thought this was a really good Burnley performance. But yeah, big credit to Millwall for the energy, the ability to go again after expending so much energy at the weekend against Sheffield United, had to make changes because of injury to the squad. Incredible 4 points, and, you know, not season defining, but mouthwatering prospect going to Luton. I think it is next Tuesday. Stoke at the weekend, which will be a great atmosphere. I think it always is, you know, those fan bases, Stoke v Millwall. And then Luton, I thought on Tuesday, just made me think of that Luton QPR game towards the tail end of last season, when it was almost winner takes all at that stage for a playoff position. Didn't play out like that, but this is two teams in Luton and Millwall who've got a great opportunity. And I think that'll be a great spectacle next week.
I looked at the fixture list, Matt, as well. I wouldn't swap Millwall's. They've played almost all of the toughest fixtures, all of the big guns away, most of them at home. They've got mid-table sides and lower reach sides between now and the end of the season. I'll be really surprised if Millwall aren't in the playoffs now.
Yeah, toughest away games appear to be Luton and West Brom. So it's looking good for the Lions. Millwall then, our team of the week. And we're going to finish off today with a look ahead to some of the weekend's big games. It is 2nd v 7th at Bramall Lane, where Sheffield United host Watford. The Hornets on the fringes of the playoffs after their 3-2 win against West Brom on Monday, whilst the Blades were blunted by Borough and then lost to Millwall. It begs the question, Sam, is this a blip or a wobble for Sheffield United?
It's a blip, and should they lose this game, it will therefore become a wobble. And I'm pretty...
That's the correct answer.
Yeah, thank you, Clarkey. Thank you. I was pretty confident as I said it. I mean, there'll be a lot of Sheffield United fans that will be looking at the form and they'll be saying, this is a matter of time. It's 3 or 4 games, and Middlesbrough and Sheffield United are going to change positions. I wouldn't be as strong as that right now. I think there's some Sheffield United players, some big players, badly out of form. I think throughout the units, I think you could look at Norwood, I think you could look at Egan, Basham defensively, and I don't think as Ndiaye maybe only got one goal since the World Cup. He's certainly not been as fruitful as he was previously, but I think this will be a really tight game. It was 1-0 in August at Watford. I don't think they're fully convincing right now either, but they've got some players coming back. Sarr looks a little bit more interested. Porteous looks like a really good signing. I think this could be one goal either way. And with Sheffield United's force and prowess from set pieces, maybe a carbon copy of what happened at Vicarage Road, but to the opposite team.
That was a big win for Watford, wasn't it, Adrian, on Monday night? They'd drawn three in a row before them, so they needed that, and they'll come into this one believing that they can do what Millwall did so well at Bramall Lane last weekend.
It was the first time in 17 games that Watford had scored more than twice, so it's amazing, really. They've been very light on goals. And if you look at the goals, they played pretty well against West Brom. If you look at the goals, the run of the ball absolutely went for them. That is a match where they could have drawn a blank quite easily, but for the bounce of the ball and the odd deflection here and there. So I wouldn't be totally blown away by that victory. I think they've got a lot of work to do. It still feels like Slaven Bilic is trying to find himself, trying to find his best 11. He's used a lot of players this season, 38 in total. That's 10 more than Burnley, for example. I think it's 8 more than Sheffield United. The Blades lost their defensive composure, didn't they, against Borough? They lost their defensive composure against Millwall. Aggression, a sort of aggressive, forceful approach made hay. So if Watford, go to Bramall Lane and play that way, they've got a chance. But I agree with Sam. I think this will be a low-scoring affair.
Meanwhile, in League One, it's Charlton against the top boy, Sheffield Wednesday. All not well at the Valley. A recent takeover bid has collapsed. Adrian, I wonder if that's why Dean Holden keeps getting linked with other jobs. Feels like maybe he, was obviously delighted to get the job and get back in. But as he and many of his predecessors have found out, you're not just managing 11 players on the pitch when you take the Charlton job these days.
Yeah, and he's on a short-term deal, isn't he, Dean Holden? I'm pretty sure of that. So why wouldn't he? Players can talk to other clubs, can't they, when their contracts are running down, and it's not that long, I don't think, on Dean Holden's contract. So yeah, if he's got an agent, maybe the agent's linking with other people. He's done a solid job, not spectacular. The results have been up and down. They were well beaten, weren't they, by Derby last time out. It's going to be a tough game for them. Very tough game. Sheffield Wednesday look like champions elect, don't they? They're a level above Charlton. The issue for Charlton is not going forward. They can score goals for fun, really. Got a lot of young, talented front players. It's just clean sheets. They just don't get them, don't defend well enough, and that might be a problem against Sheffield Wednesday. But it's the kind of, if there's a big crowd turns up or a bigger crowd, that might get the juices flowing there. I do feel that the Valley, in a way, works against Charlton. It's such a big ground. And when it's less than half full, just there's not much of an atmosphere. And I think that definitely plays into the hands of opponents. So, I don't really fancy Charlton here.
Yeah, if we both fancy Sheffield United, Watford to be low scoring, I think there could be goals in this one. Just looking at the league table, 22 conceded Sheffield Wednesday, 43 Charlton. So almost double that of the visitors at the weekend. At home, though, they have been really good. Just one defeat against teams in the top half. So they seem to have raised their game. I think a lot of that probably hinges on the two wide players. I think Blackett Taylor and Rakitić are their biggest threat. They're most likely way to hurt Sheffield Wednesday in this game. And Sheffield Wednesday have been a bit of a grower on me this season, I think. You can't not, obviously, be impressed with what they're doing right now, but I think they have that good balance. Clarkie's seen them more than me, that balance of playing possession football, but also that solidity. And they can be direct as well, and they've got great assets at the forward edge of the pitch. So, yeah, I would expect this to be... I'd expect there to be goals on both sides. I'd expect Sheffield Wednesday to probably nick it, but it'd be different from what played out at Hillsborough in August, where they had to rely on a late goal to get them over the line. But I can't see this momentum seizing any stage soon. They're on a roll.
Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday retained a lot of championship quality players last summer, didn't they? And I think by avoiding that panicky fire sale that some teams go for when they get relegated, it means that they're going to go straight back up. They kept the core of their best players and made some sensible signings, speculated as well, recruited some good players that had just been promoted. With Rotherham, they stole them, went back to League One level. And I think that investment is going to be rewarded. And the owners had a lot of stick at Sheffield Wednesday, not without justification, I have to say, but the strategy that the club came up with last summer is going to pay off. They're heading straight back up.
Certainly looks that way when 8 of their last 9 have Wednesday. A real Yorkshire theme to these previews, isn't there? Let's keep that going with Doncaster against Bradford in League Two. Both sides on the fringes of the playoffs ahead of kickoff. Donny had one 3 on the spin to nil before defeat at Sutton last week. And they're pretty good at home though, Adrian. 4 wins from 5 in the league there. So this will be a tricky one for Bradford, who, lest we forget, are managed by actual Mark Hughes.
Yeah, you just can't trust Bradford. You just can't. They're such a strange team, but much better away from home than they are on their own patch, weirdly enough. I think tactically it could be a really interesting game, but Bradford under Hughes have gone with this narrow midfield diamond, whereas Doncaster kind of do the opposite. They go for a 3-4-3. They want to use the full width of the pitch and that it turns into a back five, but then they spread out when they get the ball and look to break and counter. So they'll either get outnumbered in central midfield by Bradford or they'll torment Bradford down the wide area. So it'd be fascinating to see how it unfolds. Yeah, Bradford will have all the ball. I mean, that's 77% of possession against Barrow and got beat 1-0. So yeah, they've got to use their possession better than they did in that particular game. But yeah, no, this would be good. You know, two decent sized clubs going head to head and both have realistic playoff aspirations. I think that Bradford are more likely than Donny, but if Doncaster can beat Bradford, they'll start to think, hang on, maybe we can sneak in.
I mean, this stage of the season, all supporters will say, oh, this is the biggest game of the season because of where they're sitting in the league. But I think geographically as well, and yeah, 10th v 8th as it is, this is huge. I can't really believe that Donny are there and still got a chance, because it feels like they're so streaky. They're so inconsistent and they're in the midst of a really tough run. They've had some really tough fixtures in the last few weeks. But no, I agree with Clarkey. I was going to make the point about the two differing shapes. Both teams like to possess the ball as well. I think that's been a feature since Danny Schofield's gone in there. But yeah, and in terms of the goal stakes, you know, Bradford really over-reliant on Andy Cook, as we know. And Doncaster haven't got probably as many goals in the team. Miller with 9, Hurst with 6. So difficult one to call. I'd probably just favour the Bantams, considering their stellar away form and the streakiness of Doncaster.
Going to be really interesting, that. An interesting game, that. We might well break it down on Monday for you. We're nearly done for today. I've got a tweet of the week, though, Sam. Fascinated to get your take on this, because it comes from the Stoke City official account. So this is not a player or a manager. This is Stoke City taking a picture of whatever it is, I'd guess 500 supporters in the away end at Swansea on Tuesday night, with the caption, "Never an easy journey on a Tuesday night, but we heard you." Heart emoji. I mean, I'm not sure why a Tuesday night would be more difficult than Friday rush hour or a Saturday per se, but I take the point. What do you make of this? It's kind of like a cliche from admin. It just flummoxed me a bit because I've never seen anything like this.
It's a bad photo. Listen, I'm no photographer, but
you zoom in to not show the empty bottom tier of the stand, right?
Get tighter. I like to see the faces. You know, I'd like to see the angst, the celebration up close and personal. Someone maybe with a peculiar bit of kit or something, you know, a weird hat or something. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's a bad photo. I don't want the big screen in the photo. I like the wording, but we heard you with the heart. I quite like that. Having been at Swansea v Stoke on a Tuesday night, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, it wasn't an easy journey, because you think when you get to Cardiff, you think you're done, don't you?
But was that to do with the day of the week or just the journey? That's my point.
Well, it was hassle, isn't it, in the midweek, Matt? You know, most people had to go to jobs.
And I'm going
to
go full Alan Partridge here, but when I did the game at Cardiff the other night, it was only when I arrived at the ground that my commentator on the night, Nigel Adley, said, "You know, the M4's closed between 13 and 14 on the way home, Sam." And I couldn't concentrate on the game, honestly. All I was thinking about was being in the back roads of Newbury at 1 a.m. So on that point itself, in isolation, there probably were some road closures. So well done, Potters fans.
Yeah, no, I like it. And generally, I take the point. Clarky, I think what one thing we haven't delved enough deeply enough into is the fact that admin has so much power at every club. And you'll know this from Arsenal, and Sam and I know this as well. The people who tend to do this, they're not like the director of comms for the club. They're usually fairly junior members of staff. It's a hell of a lot of responsibility.
Almost always. It's one of the most junior members of the team. But it's becoming a more and more important job, isn't it? They're being, you know, in charge of the social media. So, you know, I think that they maybe need to pay out bigger wages and attract maybe some, I'm not saying proper journalists, but you know what I mean?
Sounds like you're touting yourself for the job of Stoke City's Twitter.
Absolutely not. No, not for me. I'm a bang average tweeter. Better than Sam, but I'm still bang average.
You can have that trophy.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any. Yeah, I don't think you're
allowed that trophy emoji. Yeah,
the sentiment of this was nice. I would have thought most junior admins have to seek the approval of the comms person. I would have thought for something like this. But the sentiment was nice. Makes you feel that you're part of a big, happy family, doesn't it? And I think that when you've gone and won away from home, that feeling of being part of a group all together is really strong. And it's one of the things I miss about football. It's those away wins where you all dig deep and you claim the points. It's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, and our Twitter output is on a par with Stokes, I would say, maybe at AFL What The, if you want to follow us there, What The AFL on TikTok and Instagram. Do leave us a nice review, a 5-star rating, all that kind of stuff. Tell somebody about the podcast, if you'd be so kind as well. We'd really appreciate it. And before we go, remember the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. We will be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week, so expect another episode sometime around Monday tea time. Many thanks to Sam and Adrian for helping me through today. We'll speak to you again next week. Enjoy the football. Bye for now.